Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
It's the Football Hour with Mark Grandy and Kyle Madsen. Wrapping up the week that was with sound from the locker room, highlights from the game, and much more. And now, here's Mark Grandy and Kyle Madsen.
Yes, it is. Welcome to the Football Hour here on a Thursday on 95.7. The game generally, the Football Hour on Monday evenings, but we were tied up with Warriors basketball Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, and it's an important week, so we figured we'll bring you the Football Hour on Thursday this week as the Niners get ready to take on the Green Bay Packers. Sunday, 1:25 kick Pacific time out in Green Bay. Snowing a lot in Green Bay today, according to reports, although it looks like the weather should be relatively decent, although still cold, but not snow, not precipitation on Sunday. That's the expectation, but that's not going to really help the Niners a ton because they still got a ton of hurdles to clear, Kyle. They've got a lot of obstacles, a lot of things to work through, and it only got harder today when Brock Purdy, after being limited in practice yesterday with a sore right shoulder, he did not finish practice today, and then he did not speak to the media on Thursday as he has every game week prior so far this season. We don't know exactly what his status is going into the weekend, Kyle. We will probably learn more, not probably, we will learn more tomorrow when Kyle Shanahan addresses the media for the final time before the game. But at this point, Kyle, it seems like the safest thing we can say is the Niners, not sure if they're going to have Brock Purdy available on Sunday, because if they were sure, he would have talked to the media today.
Yeah, you know, we talked about this on Overtime after the loss to the Seahawks. And I said, by Sunday, I'm going to talk myself into it.
Are you there yet?
And buddy, we're here on Thursday, and I was sitting there on my drive home today, and I went, you know, there's the desperation factor. 5-5, you know, you got to have it. Green Bay doesn't really got to have it. Like, they'd like to have it, but it's not like a need it type of game. Maybe. And then you get the practice participation report, and it's no Trent Williams. It's no Nick Bosa. You hear that Brock Purdy tried throwing and then left the field, and Shanahan said that it was a rest thing. I don't believe that for a second. That was he was going to try and give it a go today and could not. So he went back to the locker room or the training room or wherever he went. It's just not a great vibe. You got Nick Bosa, who actively after the game was like, yeah, no, I don't know if I'm going to play, which is insane to hear from a player. Trent Williams didn't practice at all last week and still played, so maybe he goes. But it would not shock me if it's Brandon Allen under center with Jalen Moore at left tackle and Robert Beal at defensive end, or Sam Okwuanu, or whoever would start for Nick Bosa. And in that event, I don't feel great. I'd talk myself into it a little, but without those guys on the field, I mean, I don't think anybody would go in and expect the 49ers to go beat Green Bay.
Yeah, we spent a lot of time this season, and so many, you know, Niners people have spent so much time this year talking about just how bad the year has been and all the frustration and the mistakes, but it has never felt like this. And this is what you're talking about. You know, you were on Overtime on Sunday, our post-game show here on 95.7 The Game, thinking by the time Sunday came around, maybe you'd be a little more open to the idea of the Niners taking care of business, winning the game, and maybe turning a corner and getting the job done. The mood has changed drastically since then, because not only are you going into a game, and this has always been the case since he lost to the Seahawks, like a gotta have it game, like the numbers suggest, a lot of the analytics, whether you use PFF or you use ESPN or you use any other data-driven model, like you win this game and your postseason chances hang around 50%. You lose this game, they're down around 15%. Like, you gotta win this game if you're gonna go to the postseason. If you don't, you're gonna have to probably beat both the Bills and the Lions to get it done. That seems very difficult to do, and you're going to need help from elsewhere to get it done. You might not really control your own destiny unless you just go crazy and win every single game on the rest of your schedule, which is certainly possible, but given what the Niners have put on tape, seems exceedingly unlikely. And then you throw in on top of this, it seems, I mean, if I were to guess, it seems like Nick Bosa is not going to play in this game. I wouldn't be that surprised if Trent Williams still does play, but it might also be trending that Brock Purdy isn't going to play. So you just put the importance of this game on the back burner, and then you just think about the key players that the Niners might not have. You're going to get Kittle back. We know that. McCaffrey, great, third game back. Maybe he's going to be looking a little bit more like last year's McCaffrey. You have a couple of things going your way. But potentially down, your only real consistent pass rusher, by far your best offensive lineman, and last year's MVP finalist. Like, that's not good in a game that you have to win on the road in a rough environment against a really good team in your conference, a team that probably wants to beat you because you beat them in the playoffs last year. Like, we've talked so much this year about general frustration. This is legit, like, the nightmare scenario for the 49ers.
Yeah, and the thing is, when you start going through the 49ers schedule and you start trying to map out a path, okay, what does the postseason look like? Because we can say 50.2% if they win and 15% if they lost or if they lose. Well, like, what does that mean, right? So the way tiebreakers work for wild card spots, let's just talk wild card here for a second. The way the tiebreakers work is head-to-head is the first tiebreaker, and then the next one is conference record. The three wild card teams right now are Minnesota, who have the head-to-head over the 49ers. Yeah. Then it's Green Bay, who they have this week, and then it's Washington, who the 49ers don't play this year, so you've got to go to conference record, where Washington is currently 5-2 and the 49ers are 3-4. So you'd be in a bad way no matter how you're matching up these tiebreak scenarios if you don't beat Green Bay. So if you win this Sunday, the reason that's such a big deal is A, it gets you to 6-5, and A, it just gives you a little bit of confidence that they can go win a game they need to have, which that's kind of my I don't, like, right now, do you feel good about them going into any game? Like, the rest of the way, do you circle a game and it's like, oh yeah, that's one they're for sure
going to
get?
The 1-2 circle, if you are going to, is the Chicago Bears, because that is a dumpster fire right now, even though it looked decent at some point early in the season. But yeah, that's the one that you'd have the most confidence in, but it's not like, yeah, guaranteed win, because nothing's been easy this year.
Yeah, but if they go in and beat Green Bay, you'd suddenly feel better about, okay, now they got to go. So you beat Green Bay. You have the head-to-head tiebreaker there. You improve your conference record. You lose to the Bills. Now that's okay. Now you can drop that game. You go to 6-6.
Yeah, it's a non-conference game. Doesn't factor into tiebreakers. Yeah.
Yep. So now you've got to go get the Bears. You've got to get the Rams. You've got to get the Dolphins. And that opens the door to allowing you to lose to the Lions, which I think they're going to, because I just kind of think the Lions are a buzzsaw right now.
Yeah.
And then you'd have to beat the Cardinals in week 18, and that would put you in an okay spot. But you said it earlier, if you lose this one, you got to, like, win out and then get help. That's where, you know, we can talk analytics, we can talk playoff percentages and this and that. It's just the very basic math of tiebreakers and wins and losses. That's just what it comes down to. And I was starting to talk myself into it, and then you see this injury situation, and man, it's bleak. It's really tough.
Yeah, really, really tough. And this is where, you know, like, the Niners in the past have been able to survive weeks like this. Like, there's been weeks like this in past years where they've accomplished so much, where you're just like, all right, this is a week where not in the in the sense of the season is on the line, but like your backs are up against the wall in this game, and you get a really stiff challenge because you're without, you know, George Kittle for one game, and you're without Deebo Samuel. They happen to overlap, and they're both missing a game against a conference opponent late in the year that might impact, you know, standings overall at the end of the season. The only difference, though, is in the past, Kyle, when those were the scenarios, instead of being 5-5, the Niners were 8-2 or 7-3, and exactly. you have already built up the ability to not trick off and not care about a game, but you have the ability to lose a game here or there and still be totally fine for the postseason, still be totally fine to win the division, and still potentially maybe be fine to win the one seed or get a bye. Like, I think back to the first year that this team made a run to the postseason. It was the 2019 mm-hmm. year, excuse me. They lost, I don't know if it was the second to last game of the year or the third to last game of the year,
against Atlanta
at home. Mm-hmm. And Atlanta at that point, not a good football team. They were very bad. And that was like, uh-oh, like, is something wrong with this team? No, they've bounced back. Then the end of the regular season, they narrowly beat the Seahawks in Seattle. They win the division and they get the one seed. Like, they have in the past been so good throughout the rest of the season, a few seasons aside, of course, where they have had some early seasons issues, which we spent so much time talking about this year. Mm-hmm. They have built in room for error. And what has happened when you blow a lead against the Rams, you blow a lead against the Cardinals, you blow a lead against the Seahawks, you haven't allowed yourself the ability to trip up the rest of the year. Like, this team mm-hmm. has to stay upright the rest of the season. You don't have the ability to trip up, and that's what makes everything we've talked about through the first 10 games this year that much more difficult, because you haven't been healthy. I'm not going to say that, but you've had your quarterback every single game. You have had a decent amount of weapons every single game, aside from Hufanga and Greenlaw, and those are two big names. Your defense has been relatively healthy as well. Mm. Bosa hasn't missed a game. Fred Warner hasn't missed a game. You've gotten great contributions from your rookie defensive backs. Like, you haven't really had a game, maybe the Rams game, where you were like, well, if we were fully healthy, we win that one. But even then, you had a lead late and you blew it with a number of backbreaking mistakes. They just haven't afforded themselves the ability to be like, all right, we can kind of forget about this game. They have been so bad in key moments that they are forcing themselves to try to play a game down a number of key players against a very good team on the road and try to do the impossible. Like, they just haven't given themselves the ability to take the easy. They haven't.
No, and even like 2021 is the season everybody circles, right? Because that was a year in week 9, they lose to Arizona. Colt McCoy and the Arizona Cardinals went into Levi Stadium and just obliterated the 49ers.
Was it Benjamin with that crazy run?
Yeah.
Ran over some random Niners defense.
Drake Kirkpatrick.
Yeah, Drake Kirkpatrick. Yeah.
Drake Kirkpatrick, who has a kid going to Alabama?
Yeah.
That was insane to find out. But no, so that dropped him to 3-5. It was a terrible loss. You didn't feel good about it. But here's the big difference. So they beat the Rams 31-10 on Monday night in their quote-unquote get-right game. But then here's who they beat. They beat Jacksonville, who was terrible that year, sub-500 team. They beat the Vikings, who were 8-9 that year. Yeah. Then they lost to Seattle, who finished 7-10. They beat the Bengals. Good win in overtime against the Bengals. Brandon Ayuk, walk-off winner in overtime, 26-23. Cincinnati, remember, went to the Super Bowl that year. That's a really good win. Then they beat the Falcons. They beat the heck out of the Falcons, who I also believe finished 7-10. You go lose to Tennessee, finished 12-5. You beat the heck out of the Texans, who I think finished 4-13, if I'm remembering this right. And then
that was the Trey Lance start.
Yes. Yeah. Trey Lance started that one. And then they went in week 18 and they beat the Rams in overtime 27-24 to punch their ticket to the playoffs. The point of all that is to say their schedule that year was not good. This year they have multiple playoff teams in front of them. And the teams that aren't playoff teams are like the Dolphins, who are now healthy and playing better and will probably be fighting for their playoff lives at that point. It's the Bears, who are, you mentioned, a dumpster fire right now. But it's like, man, it's Caleb Williams. They got some playmakers. You can't sleepwalk through that game. They almost just beat the Packers, right? They were a misfield goal away from beating Green Bay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is the big difference that I keep coming back to. And it's why I'd love to go, oh, yeah, they've been in this spot before. Everything's going to be fine. But they've not been in this spot before because they haven't had this kind of gauntlet schedule after after playing as poorly as they did. Like, they're not going to get that ramp up period to kind of, okay, yeah, got some momentum, and now going into a big game, they can go win in LA to punch their ticket. It's like, no, they're going to have to figure this out on the fly, because there's no easy game to get right coming up.
Yeah, I think you brought up a good phrase there. Like, they've done this before, and you're right. They have been in similar situations where it's like, win or your season might be over. Like the 2021 Rams game on Monday night that you brought up. That was win and your season might be over, and we're probably benching Jimmy Garoppolo for Trey Lance.
Yeah.
Like, that was a moment, but it hasn't felt like this, and maybe you agree, maybe you disagree. It hasn't felt like this for me. Like, this feels the most like uh-oh for the 49ers in a long time, because I think expectations for me a little bit different, because those other years, 2021 and maybe at times early in the 2022 season after Trey Lance went down, and then some of the early issues with Jimmy Garoppolo before he kind of figured things out, and then of course he goes down, Brock steps in and plays well. But specifically the 2021 season, I don't know how you felt back then, but I remember thinking to myself at that moment, well, I don't think Jimmy Garoppolo is a very good quarterback, so I'm not so sure what this team is really even capable of it anyway. But exactly. Now you got Brock Purdy, who was an MVP finalist last year, and while he hasn't had nearly as good of a season so far this year, you still have those expectations that, well, this team should be better. But like 2021, it kind of felt like, yeah, they've got a lot of talent defensively, some skill position guys, you know, they're quality for sure, but it's Jimmy Garoppolo driving the bus, and how much do I really believe in that guy? I believe tenfold in Brock Purdy than I ever did in Jimmy Garoppolo, maybe aside from the very, very early Jimmy Garoppolo experience. But 2021, that was not early in that experience. That was getting pretty darn late in that experience, and we were a year away from his last ever start as a San Francisco 49er. So for me, I haven't ever felt this much desperation as an outsider watching the 49ers, because the expectations for the team are much higher, and maybe that should also lend to a little bit more confidence that they can figure it out, because I think they are a better team than they were in 2021. At least they should be, given who their quarterback is. But given what the issues have been so far this year, sure, there's not a lot of reason to be confident that they're going to turn it around.
I think the difference for me is in that 21 season, it was, so they lost to Green Bay, oddly enough, in week three on Sunday night,
yep,
and that was the Davante Adams catch over Fred Warner, who just couldn't quite get a hand up.
That was Trey Lance, final play of the first half, runs for a touchdown.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So they lose that one by two. They lose to Seattle, where Jimmy Garoppolo gets hurt in the first half. They lose to Arizona and Trey Lance's first start. The big difference here is in that season, it felt like Jimmy Garoppolo was the problem. They after that loss to Arizona, I remember being like, you can't start Jimmy again. You can't. And then they did, and they went on their little run. But that defense was a lot better. You had a better version of Debo Samuel in 2020. Yeah, you had an all-pro Debo that year. George Kittle was obviously really good. You had a really good run game. It wasn't Christian McCaffrey, but you had a really good running game. And just a better overall defensive unit, I think, or at least maybe a better coach defensive unit. This year, you can't circle a Jimmy Garoppolo. There's not one thing that you go, man, if they fix this one thing, they'd be awesome. Like, we could talk special teams, but then you go, okay, but what about the penalties? What about the red zone scoring? Josh Dubow from the Associated Press posted this stat today that for all the talk about the red zone scoring, they have their fewest non-red zone touchdowns of the Kyle Shanahan era this year through 11 weeks.
So that just means touchdown plays of 21 or more yards.
Yes.
Yeah.
They have three. The 2017. Remember that 2017 team? They had five at this point.
2017. Oh my God. Right.
Like, what a disaster. So that's why I think it feels so grim at this point. But on the other hand, I feel more, I don't want to say at peace, but it's more understandable now. Because this is a group that has been together for the most part, for a lot of them, since 2019. Like, yeah, windows close, and maybe that's just what's happening. And I think that's why there's so much urgency, or what feels like so much desperation or frustration, is because it's a frustration sensation. Because, please.
Cha-ching!
Thank you. So it's a level of frustration because people kind of know, like, oh, this isn't, they're going to turn it around. This is a group that is sustaining the weight of a half decade long run, which is incredible in the NFL.
Yeah.
5 years of being a competitive team, because even in 2020 when they were super banged up, it was like week 14 or 15 by the time they were out of the playoff race. So to be competitive and be in the NFC title game or better in four of those 5 years, but to suffer all those crushing season-ending losses, you've played a bunch of extra games, I think it's just kind of catching up with them. And I think that's why this is so tough, because it's like that's just the reality of the NFL and it's kind of what happens. But at the same time, they're so talented that you want to talk yourself into, okay, but if they just flip the switch and man, maybe they're flipping that switch and there's just nobody home.
Maybe. And we can keep talking about just how talented they are. And obviously there's a big question mark around the quarterback going into this game, but we also can talk about the quarterback and just how well or not well that he's been playing lately. I mean, it's no secret in the NFL, you kind of go as your quarterback goes, and by no means has Brock Purdy been bad this year, Kyle, but he's also not coming close to the production that he put up last year, and maybe some of that is to blame elsewhere, not solely on Brock Purdy. But we're also kind of getting to a situation where maybe there is a little bit of doubt about Brock Purdy's ability to carry a roster, to carry a team that's going through a little bit of a rough time. And this is a roster that still has the ability to load up at a number of other positions, because Brock Purdy is the biggest bargain in the NFL. And it might be asking a question of the 49ers decision makers this coming offseason of, you know, is what we've seen from Brock up to this point, and of course they'll use the whole rest of the season to answer this question as well, but is he playing well enough to make us confident that if we're spending $60 million on this guy a year, that he's going to be good enough to carry what will be a kind of suppressed roster elsewhere as a result? Like, this is a big moment. If Brock Purdy plays, this is a big game. Like, not perfect conditions, backs up against the wall. You might be without a key player. Maybe you're without a couple of key players. We don't know about Trent Williams. Nick Bosa, I would guess, is unlikely to play. Brock himself also, who knows what his status is going to be. But that's also where this comes in. It's not only about this season. There's so much more on the line here, and a lot of it has to do with Brock Purdy and what he might be able to demand he gets signed for this offseason.
I thought Matt Barrows made a really good point on Steiny and Guru earlier. I listened to that on the Odyssey app with the rewind feature. It's great.
There you go.
He basically said they don't really have any recourse outside of bringing Purdy back and paying him. They could theoretically be like, no, play out your last year. If the rest of the season goes poorly, let's say they finish 7-10 and he continues to turn the ball over a little too much and just not seeing the field well and being indecisive and running when he's in, turning down open throws and running instead and missing throws. If that continues, then I think the 49ers could sit there in contract negotiations and go, no, you can play one more year. You had your first little five-game stretch. Then you got hurt. You didn't have a full offseason going into your first full season as a starter, but that season was obviously great. But then there was tape out. Now there's real tape. Now people are adjusting to the offense. We want to see how you adjust moving forward before dishing out this $60-plus million contract. Mm-hmm. And maybe Purdy at that point says, what about 40? And maybe they sign him to that kind of deal at that point. But, yeah, man, there's just not, like, I don't love any of the other options, and I don't know that the 49ers would love any of their options, but you're right. These next seven games are going to really define what those negotiations look like. Because while Brock has been really good, has he been $60-plus million good? Has he been put the team on his back and win a game when you get the ball with 3:56 left to go up by a score? Has he been that good? I'm obviously not.
Yeah, no, and I mean, I'm not trying to say that, you know, the Niners and Brock Purdy playing poorly the rest of the year could ultimately be a good thing, but I mean, I'm with you. Brock Purdy is going to be this team's starting quarterback next year because I don't know exactly what else they could do, but yeah. Say there is a major struggle the rest of the year and the Niners don't have to pay top of the market for Brock Purdy. I think Brock Purdy would be absolutely idiotic to go into next season without some kind of contract. And maybe the Niners put a little bit of pressure on him and he ultimately takes a little bit less, although the Niners have been through this so many times, and the most recent times they went through it with Brandon Ayuk, it left a major sour taste in their mouth, so who knows if they'll have the stomach to do it again, but it's certainly something to keep an eye on. We can talk a little bit more about that when we come back.
I have some advice for Brock Purdy.
Okay. Also, I want to talk about something that defensive coordinator Nick Sorensen said earlier today, and just general this coaching staff and how much confidence or lack thereof Niner fans should have in this group going forward. We can get into that and a whole lot more. It's the Football Hour here on 95.7 The Game. That's Kyle Madsen. I'm Mark Randy. We're back with more until 7 o'clock right after this here on 95.7 The Game.
The Football Hour with Mark Randy and Kyle Madsen on 95.7 The Game.
Welcome back. Football Hour continues. Mark Randy, Kyle Madsen with you on a Thursday. Normally we're with you here on Mondays, but Warriors basketball Monday. We had Warriors Roundtable with Kevin Dana and Gary St. Jean on Tuesday from 6 to 7. Warriors basketball again last night. So Kyle and I coming to you on a Thursday as the Niners gear up for an all-important game. Biggest game of the year to this point. No doubt about it. Niners in Green Bay taking on the Packers. And the injury report, maybe not terribly lengthy, but it's big name after big name after big name. If you're just joining us, Brock Purdy did not finish practice today because of that sore right shoulder that has been bothering him ever since the Seahawks game. He also did not speak to the media as he is scheduled to do every Thursday, every game week Thursday, and he's done that every game week Thursday so far this season. Also, Trent Williams, who did not practice all of last week, but still played. Unsure if he will play on Sunday. And Nick Bosa, who injured his other oblique. He had a hip that was bothering him going into the game against the Seahawks. It bothered him in Tampa Bay as well. He injured the other side in the game, and his status is uncertain at this point as well. I'm sure we'll get updates from Kyle Shanahan and all three of those guys and a few others tomorrow, so you can keep it locked here on 95.7 The Game for that. But Kyle, there is no doubt this is the biggest challenge the 49ers are facing. The injury report makes this this task ahead against a good Green Bay team maybe the toughest test the Niners have faced so far this year. I'm thinking about the Chiefs game, which is obviously a major one, but this opponent on the road in that weather, potentially without two or maybe three of your five most important players, this seems like a mountain that the Niners might not be ready to summit just yet.
I'm going to throw a question at you, and I'm going to leave out Christian McCaffrey because I believe he's going to play.
Seems likely.
Just the management of his injury, we're probably going to see non-participation Wednesday, limited Thursday, full go Friday, he'll play Sunday.
Yeah.
I'm assuming he's going to play. I'm also assuming George Kittle's going to play just based on his certainty.
Yeah, he said as much yesterday.
Right. So I'm going to assume he's playing. With all due respect to the other guys, I'm going to throw these three players at you. You have to pick one to play for the 49ers to give them the best chance to win. Nick Bosa, Trent Williams, or Brock Purdy?
I think I have to choose Brock Purdy just by default because he's the quarterback. But the fact that you got to think about it speaks to how important those other two guys are, right? I mean, if it's not Trent Williams, we're going to see Jalen Moore protecting whichever quarterback's blindside, right? Like, Jalen Moore is going to start, probably.
I imagine it'll be Brandon Allen.
Yeah, and probably Brandon Allen. If Nick Bosa doesn't play, I mean, you've got nobody's, doesn't even matter who it's going to be at that point filling in for Nick Bosa. I think I got to go Brock, but I don't feel good about it.
So that I went Bosa on this.
Okay. Tell me
and
why.
With all due respect to Trent Williams and his importance, I trust Kyle Shanahan and the 49ers playmakers and Brandon Allen's experience in their system to piece together enough offense more than I trust the 49ers to find a way to get stops without Nick Bosa. Like, I'm already worried if Nick Bosa does play that they're not going to be able to slow down Green Bay. Matt LaFleur is a really good coach. They have an excellent run game. Jordan Love has been a little bit up and down. He's had some injury stuff this year, but a really good young quarterback. They have a very good offensive line. It's really hard to get Jordan Love on the ground.
A lot of interceptions, though, this year.
Yeah, no doubt. But
getting pressure on him helps force those interceptions.
Yeah, and if you don't have Bosa, I'm not totally sure what the answer is. And that's to say nothing for his impact in the run game and setting the edge and some of the things he does coming off the edge and getting down the line to make stops. So that's kind of where I land on Nick Bosa, because if you told me, all right, Brandon Allen with the patchwork offensive line and Christian McCaffrey and George Kittle and Juwan Jennings, they got to piece together some offense. It might force some creativity and some innovation and some weird wrinkles where we go, man, Shanahan really in his bag today, which we haven't done in freaking forever. I think it would kind of force that. And with Bosa on the field, you feel at least a little bit better about their defense's ability to get stops. So that's I think why I land on Nick Bosa ahead of Brock Purdy. That answer might be different if it was something long term, but if it's just for 1 week.
Yeah, I understand where you're coming from. I think importance of the quarterback outweighs that for me. However, I think one area or one reason why I might maybe lean towards what you're talking about is if you're trying to talk about like the path for the Niners to winning this football game, and I think maybe this is even if everybody's healthy, this might have to be what year was it? That was the 2021 year, the 2022 mm-hmm. playoffs, but the divisional game in Green Bay, right, where it's just defensive-centric. You used a special teams touchdown to help win the game. You didn't. Did they score an offensive touchdown in that game? I don't think so.
They 10-7.
Yeah, you had the walk-off field goal. Like, maybe not 10-7. 10 points probably does not win this game. But if the Niners are to find a way to win, even if Brock plays, even if Trent Williams plays, maybe this has to be like a 17-14 kind of game. And I'm not sure you can hold the Packers to 14 without Nick Bosa. So I think you got a point, because without Nick Bosa, this defense might get gashed for like 400 yards and 30 points.
Yeah.
Even if it is like bad weather, it might not be terrible, but it's going to be really cold, which usually helps the defense. And I don't have a lot of confidence, even if Trent and Brock Purdy are available, that this is an offense that could maybe keep pace with that if there's no Nick Bosa. So I think your argument has a little bit of credence, but I'm just not too confident in Brandon Allen, although I do respect your confidence in Kyle Shanahan, because he has very often made not great quarterbacks look better here than they have anywhere else.
Yeah, can you throw this in breaking route? Can you throw this out breaking route? Like, let's go. Can you run a play action? Come on, BA, let's go.
Although part of that has always been like, all right, we'll just give the ball to McCaffrey and Debo, and more so Debo, because McCaffrey hasn't been here as long, but that hasn't really worked. I mean, we're talking on overtime on Sunday. Is Debo Samuel washed? Is he just not the same guy anymore? Is this a hidden injury? Do defenses know what's coming? And I mean, I hate to break it to you, if Brandon Allen's the quarterback, defenses know this is going to be centered around Christian McCaffrey and George Kittle and Debo Samuel and unique and creative ways to get him the football.
So I'm glad you brought up Debo, because that's something I've been wanting to talk about and I have not gotten a chance to yet. Eric Branch asked Kyle Shanahan yesterday about Debo Samuel's lack of overall production. It's kind of mentioning, you know, he has 79 yards on 27 carries or whatever. And Kyle Shanahan was like, well, it's the looks. He's getting different looks. There's been a couple looks that he missed, but for the most part, he's not getting good looks. The question is not the yards per carry with Debo. That's not the issue. The issue is not the raw data. The issue is, A, watch him. Like, we can get away from numbers. Just watch Debo Samuel, and you tell me that's the same player we saw even last year? No chance, dude. But then you go look at the numbers. His yards after catch per reception, career low. His missed tackles forced on catches and runs, career lows by like a lot. Like when you talk about the rate that he's breaking tackles, just by a lot. His yards per route run, this is all according to Pro Football Focus, second lowest mark of his career. And I think the lowest one was 2020 when he was injured and out of shape to start that year. So his numbers just that indicate his explosiveness and his athleticism are all down. And that's the issue with Debo at this point. Mm. It's less about his yards per carry and more about, hey, man, he should have more yards per carry and more receiving yards, but he can't break tackles anymore. He's not running away from anybody anymore. And that's what concerns me.
Yeah, I mean, no doubt it's concerning because he's oftentimes been a cheat code. And when you do get in situations where maybe your quarterback is having troubles or maybe you just simply don't believe a ton in your quarterback and you need someone to bail you out, you just give the ball to Debo and let him do work. I recall, I think, in that 2021 season that we're talking about, the Monday night game against the Rams, I mean, Debo Samuel was a man possessed in that game. And he had that crazy catch over the middle where he was, like, reaching back, and he's, like, sandwiched by two defenders. He somehow catches the ball, which is impressive enough, then breaks, like, three tackles and outruns everybody else down the field for a touchdown. Like, you saw that so often from Debo Samuel. And, of course, I mean, that was the 2021 year when he was unbelievable. Maybe the most unique season we've seen from an offensive player in NFL history. Maybe Christian McCaffrey last year is up there as well, but what Debo did in 2021, amazing, and something that we rarely see in the NFL. And of course, that's his best season. He's not always going to be at that level. He's never going to be at that level again, but you just haven't quite seen that explosion nearly as often. And when you are in a game like this where maybe you're down some key guys, you just need individual greatness to carry you, and Debo Samuel hasn't shown that individual greatness at any kind of consistent level in the last year and a half.
I kind of wonder if we see a game plan, speaking of Debo, going back to the 2020 season. I don't know if anybody remembers this game because that was such a weird year, but at home against the Rams, Jimmy Garoppolo was dealing with a high ankle sprain and was not really able to push the ball down the field at all. And they beat the Rams and basically nullified Aaron Donald by making every pass an extension of the run game, save for like a shot over the middle to George Kittle.
Yeah.
Debo in that game had like six catches for 66 yards and a touchdown, and I think he had a negative average depth of target. Like everything was sideways and behind the line of scrimmage. And I kind of wonder if that's like, A, that's the type of Samuel we're missing, but B, I kind of wonder if that's the type of game plan we might see on Sunday if Brock Purdy doesn't play. If it's just like, hey, everything's going to be run heavy and every throw is going to be an extension of the run game.
I mean, if they can do that and have it be effective, then yes, do it. The issue last week, and I guess really the last 2 weeks, is there was the gigantic overcorrection from the Niners offense. They went from before the bye, the team that would push the ball down the field as aggressive as anybody else. In fact, more aggressive than anybody else. In the last two games after the bye, when we were kind of hoping and expecting for a turnaround, a la what happened in 2021 and even last year post-bye, when you snapped your three-game losing streak and then dominated everybody the rest of the regular season, they have completely reverted to a team that really only throws checkdowns. And part of me is maybe wondering if this Brock Purdy shoulder has been bothering him a little bit longer than we all think, because there has... I can't believe that there has been this gigantic overcorrection from Shanahan and the offense from as aggressive, the air yards, average depth of target, all that nonsense, highest in the league, to now only throwing checkdowns. I'm speaking a little tongue-in-cheek here. Sure, not only, sure, but for the vast majority of completions and pass attempts, it's in the flat, over the middle, 5 yards down the field to Kittle, to McCaffrey, to Debo, end-arounds and reverses and jet sweeps and all of that. Like, I can't believe Kyle Shanahan's going into those last two games thinking, yeah, this is the way that we win, when Debo Samuel is putting what he's putting on tape lately.
Zero throws of 20-plus yards in the last two games?
Crazy.
None? Not one shot play? I can't get
one? After that's all you did for the first eight games you played this year?
Right. It's wild, man. Can I throw another question at you about Brock? Because in the last segment, we were talking about Brock Purdy and his market after Matt Barrows was talking about that today with Steine and Guru. What happens if the 49ers say, hey, we didn't love how you played last year. We'd like to see how you adapt now the defenses have adjusted. Here is a $40 million short-term contract. Or they say, you play this out, and then we'll throw a franchise tag on you and if we want to move forward here. If he says no, then trade me. Is there a team out there that will give up a real draft pick to pay Brock Purdy $60+ million, do you think? Because I imagine if the 49ers have that question, every other team in the NFL that would be acquiring this quarterback would have that question. Because if you're Carolina, are you looking at Brock Purdy and going, that's the guy that's going to be the rising tide that lifts all boats? Probably not. If you're the Raiders, are you going, yeah, that's the guy we want to pay $60 million to? We haven't committed to a quarterback yet, and even with Jimmy Garoppolo, it's a very team-friendly deal they could get out of. Is that the guy they're ready to commit to? I can't think of other teams that need quarterbacks, but the list goes on. Every team would have that question, and then they would also have to give up a premium draft pick to get him. So that's where I don't imagine there would...
If the number that Purdy and his camp stick to is $60 million a year, then yeah, I might be with you. I'm not so sure there's a lot of suitors out there that the Niners might be able to work something out with.
Yeah, and that's why I think the Niners might have some leverage here, especially if he continues to not play well. Now if they bounce back and they go, how many games do they have left? Seven. If they go 6-1, and their one loss is like a close loss to the Lions or a close loss to the Bills, and they beat the Lions.
This is all out the window.
Brock plays lights out, then sure. But through 11 weeks, I'm not totally sure that he's played like a quarterback that I want to pay $60+ million to.
Yeah, I mean, there are like... I mean, you think of what some of not necessarily bad franchises, but what desperate teams have done in the past, and you could maybe find a team or two that would be willing to do something like it. Like, I mean, the Daniel Jones contract is absolutely abysmal, and you look at what the Giants just did to Daniel Jones today. Did I read this right? He was playing scout team safety in practice today, Daniel Jones.
Bro, because they made him the fourth string quarterback behind Tim Boyle.
Absolutely crazy. They're starting Danny DeVito over him again, and Drew Locke, who's sitting there, is like
Tommy DeVito.
Slipping the tongue there. Tommy DeVito over him, and Drew Locke's sitting there like, well, I thought I was QB2. Why are you starting DeVito over me? That's a whole different conversation. But like, the point is, there are quarterback needy and desperate teams that might do some crazy, you know what, if push came to shove. But $60 million a year to a guy who, yeah, MVP finalist a season ago, but coming off of this meh season, and it hasn't been bad by any stretch. We're not saying that. And obviously the last seven games will have a gigantic impact on how this conversation develops. But paying him $60 million is one thing, but what you're saying, giving up a draft pick in order to have the right to pay him, that is another thing. I mean, Trey Lance fetched the Niners a fourth-round pick.
And not play for a terrible team.
That feels like a major win for the 49ers.
Despite
the fact that they gave up all the first-round picks to get him in the first place, you made a decent situation out of a terrible situation. Credit to the Niners for that. Is there any team that's going to give up a second-round pick for Brock Purdy in order to pay him $60 million? If that's what he and his group stick to, then yeah, I'm not so sure that there's any way that can happen.
No, man. Honestly, I don't think the 49ers would do it because I think they like him. Like, that's the whole thing here. This is not a Brock Purdy stinks conversation. This is a, if another team paid this quarterback $60 million, we would be from the outside looking in going, why are they paying that guy? That's a terrible idea. Like, you're not going to be able to build a team around him. Like, we wondered why, like, Dak Prescott has had a ton of success, and we've wondered why the Cowboys paid Dak. We wonder why the Jags paid Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah, like,
and why the Dolphins paid Tua.
Like, these are all good quarterbacks, but what's happening across the NFL, and at some point this bubble is going to burst, like it does always. Like, these are all good quarterbacks that are making all this money, but they are not, like, best quarterback in the history of the NFL good. Like, right. And that's right. What this money is. At some point, and maybe Brock Purdy is this guy, at some point, Kyle, there is going to be a quarterback and his agent who looks at a situation and says, all right, I can either force my hand and say I'm signing for the most money ever, or I won't play, or I can take $20 million a year less, stay with a great head coach, stay with a roster that can keep me competitive and can help me look good. Like, Mahomes kind of did it. The Mahomes thing, I think it's a little, we kind of tell the story different as when it happened. When it happened, it was like, sure. Oh my God, that's the biggest contract in NFL history.
$1 billion.
Part of it was because just how long the contract was. It wasn't necessarily crazy AAV, but it was still up there. We look at it now, of course, because it's what, like 3 years ago, and we think of it, wow, he's now like the 12th or 13th or 14th highest paid quarterback AAV in the NFL. There's a little bit of, you know, we're telling the story wrong based on how it actually happened. But I do think we will see a point, Kyle, where not just the next quarterback that's due to get paid that has, like, kind of won some games at some point for you, that they're not going to continue getting breaking the bank. That can't happen. Mm-hmm. It's not sustainable. There have already been so many teams that are killing themselves for doing it. Like, the Broncos saved themselves by drafting Bo Nix, who looked really good. But we forget everything that they did when they traded for Russell Wilson and how much money they paid him, and that is going to hurt them for years going forward. We already mentioned Daniel Jones in the Giants, one of the worst contracts that any team has given out to a quarterback. And then the king of them all, Deshaun Watson and the Browns. Sure. I mean, the Browns have a really talented roster, but they don't have a quarterback because the one that they gave all the money in the world to absolutely sucks at playing football. Like, there is going to be a breaking point. I'm not projecting that Brock Purdy will be the one to break the trend, but at some point there will be, because as the Niners stare down the barrel of this shotgun potentially this offseason, they might come to a point where they say, well, we feel like we have to because we don't have another option, but I don't think he's worth the money. That is not a sustainable business practice, and at some point it will change.
I think the other comparison you can throw out there is Jared Goff. The Rams paid Jared Goff and then had to attach a first-round pick to get rid of him to get a better quarterback. Like, that's a tough scene. And Jared Goff is the guy who took a team to the Super Bowl.
And the Lions absolutely love it. Yeah.
Yeah, and right. And now he's about to take the Lions to the Super Bowl. Crazy. But I think you're probably right. And I do wonder if at some point, and maybe it is Purdy, looks at his success last year and looks at his struggles this year and goes, okay, I'm not really going to have a leg to stand on. If I test the free agent market, $60+ million isn't going to be out there for me.
Yeah.
This is a situation that I've had success in and can continue to have success in if I allow them to keep building a roster like the one that went to the Super Bowl last year. And maybe he does. Maybe he takes $40+ million. But I've also seen that athletes are trying to make as much money as humanly possible.
As they should.
Get your bag.
Yeah.
I would have, if they signed Brock Purdy to a $40 million contract, average annual value, obviously his structure matters and stuff and guarantees, but let's just say it's $40 million-ish a year. I would be so much more confident in them moving forward than I would at $60+ million. Like, I think Brock is good. I would just have questions about, all right, it's going to be a lot on him. I don't know if he can do it, but right now that's just kind of how I feel. I think he's a really good player who they should keep around, but at top of market money, with what that's going to cost to the roster. I mean, you're already looking at Javon Hargrave likely gone, Charvarius Ward's probably out of here, Leonard Floyd might be out of here, Deebo Samuel might be out of here. You got to talk about George Kittle turning 32 in October. There are a lot of really high quality players that are going to be exiting that the 49ers are going to have to replace at some point here. And whether they do that via the draft or financially is probably going to come down to how much money Brock Purdy makes.
Yeah. Yeah, we got a couple of minutes left here, but I can already hear like how the conversation goes. It's like, well, first of all, yeah, go and get all the money you possibly can, and that's totally, totally fair. I mean, if you feel you feel like you can get 60 and you want to get 60, then by all means, go and get 60. But also be prepared to maybe not, I mean, you could be the greatest quarterback of all time and it might not matter, and you may, you carry the weakest roster in the NFL to the postseason each and every year. But if you sign for that much money and you don't happen to be the greatest quarterback of all time, be prepared to maybe not have as much success. And there's probably a balance. There's a breaking point where you say, all right, well, $40 million is still a hell of a lot of money. We're talking per year. $40 million per year is still a hell of a lot of money. If that means I get to keep Brandon Ayuk around, and I get to keep Christian McCaffrey around, and I get to keep X, Y, and Z around instead of having to rely on a second-year guy who we drafted in the fifth round last year and hope that he turns out well and is able to help me out. Like, the examples are already there. I mean, I mentioned Mahomes, which, again, wasn't really crazily team-friendly when he signed it, but it is now. Even they still had to get rid of Tyreek Hill, even with that Mahomes contract. But it's worked because Mahomes not making as much as the other great quarterbacks and, of course, is one of the greatest quarterbacks who have ever lived. The other example is the greatest quarterback to have ever lived, Tom Brady, who consistently took less so he could help build a stronger roster around him. This isn't some sort of like negative point against you. Like, I need help. Like, no, I'm not getting into any of that toxic talk. Like, this is just put a good team around me. I will be better and I will have more success as a result.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, this is not anti getting your bag. If that's a prerogative, then cool. But the 49ers would be in a better spot if Purdy took even a little bit less.
Yeah.
And even a small amount less. Yeah. The other aspect of this, and we don't have time to get into it, is part of the reason the Chiefs have been so good is because they've drafted really well.
Yeah.
And that's something the 49ers are going to have to start doing, especially now that they have their premium draft capital back. They've got to restock the cupboard.
Yeah. And they, good start to that so far this year. There's no doubt about that, with specifically on the defensive side of the football. Hope we see a little bit more Ricky Pearsall this weekend as well. I thought it was unfortunate. He only had two targets, no catches in the game against the Seahawks after he scored his first career touchdown in Tampa off the bye. But if there is no Trent Williams, maybe if Brock Purdy does not play either, you might need to get it in the hands of a playmaker, and he has shown in a little bit of time that he can be a playmaker. So we'll look forward to that. Kyle, we will be back to break it all down on Sunday. The pregame show, the kickoff show, will begin at 11. The game kicks off at 1:25. Kyle and I, along with Sterling, will be back probably around 4:30 or so for overtime. The second the game ends, we'll take you for at least a few hours into the night as we react to Niners and Packers on Sunday. But until then, Kyle, thanks so much for spending this hour with me, and I'll talk to you on Sunday.
Yeah, dude, can't wait.
Cool. Looking forward to that. That's coming up on Sunday. For Kyle, my name is Mark, signing off. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll talk next time here on 95.7 The Game.